Sakurai with APA Compass, and I'm here with our in-studio panelists. We'll be taking your calls in about 15 minutes, and that number is 503-231-8187. Again, that's 503-231-8187. With me in the studio here are Astrid DeBenny, Tara Contour, and Liz Rogers. And I just want to thank you so much for agreeing to be here with us. I know this is a complicated and often emotional topic, and I was hoping maybe we can just go around and you can introduce yourselves initially.
Hi, my name is Tara Contour, and I am one of the thousands of children who were adopted from Korea when they were young and are now living in America. I was adopted from Korea when I was around 2 years old, and I grew up in upstate New York. Now I'm pretty active in the adoption community, and I am a part of TA Voices, which stands for Transracial Adoptee Voices, which is an adult transracial adoptee group here in Portland.
Hey, I'm Liz Rogers, APA Compass collective member. I'm also a Korean American adoptee, adopted at the age of 13 months. Raised in a small town outside of Cape Cod in Massachusetts. And I've been here in Portland going on 3 years now. And I've been kind of in and out as far as participation and activity with the adopted communities.
Hello, my name is Astrid DeBenny. And my sister and I were adopted when we were 4 and 5 years old from Colombia, South America. And we were raised in the United States. We moved about every 5 years to for my father's job, and it was pretty rural areas where we were living. And so we lived in outside of Atlanta, outside of Boston, outside of Portland, Maine. And so we grew up in a lot of different areas, and getting uprooted and having to start all over again was really hard every 5 years on an average. And I've lived here in Oregon for 6 years now, and I am involved in adoptions. The work that I do, I work at the Oregon Post-Adoption Resource Center as a family support specialist, and I am also a co-founder for Adoption Mosaic, providing post-adoption pre- and post-adoption services to families that adopt privately and internationally.
Well, thank you. The first question that we had, Casey Kwong and Crystal Williams in the piece we just heard, had raised issues around culture and identity. And so I was wondering if loss of culture or kind of cultural identity has been an issue for any of you, or how you've addressed that and any thoughts you might have on that.
I think loss of culture has definitely been an issue for me. When I grew up, I was pretty much surrounded by Caucasian folks. My friends were Caucasian. My family was Caucasian. I often say that I spent half of my life sort of denying my culture, denying my Koreanness, and then I spent the other half of my life trying to explore it and trying to embrace it and trying to get it back. I think it's a difficult thing.
Yeah. Thank you. Anyone else?
Yes, for me, I don't really think that I really understood what it meant to be Colombian until I went back to Colombia. And there's not a large Colombian community in any of the places that I lived. The only other person I knew who was Colombian my whole life was my sister, Maria. Going back to Colombia at 18 was the first time that I really, that it meant something, that I could embrace a culture that I had truly lost.
I think for me, I didn't, you know, I think if maybe even while I was in college, if someone had asked me about loss of culture, I wouldn't have even known how to approach the question. I think for me, realizing the loss of culture really kind of came to head when I was studying abroad. It was I was studying in China, and most of the exchange students were from Korea and Japan. And so running into, meeting a lot of Korean students really kind of brought into question, okay, so my culture, because when we're here growing up in America, everyone identifies you as, oh, the Korean-American or the Korean. And so I went to China with that identity. And it was a confusion, not only to myself, but to everyone else, because I was getting all of my materials in Korean and I had no idea, obviously, what it was saying. And then the students, the Korean students, it took them a little while to figure out who I was. And so in that process, it brought into a lot of question of who I was, and kind of in a lot of culture questions of, yeah, I grew up with, you know, I grew up eating kimchi and, you know, my mom cooks some great Korean food. But it's really, it's not the same, because I didn't, and even now I think it's tentative, but I never really, even though I verbally identified as Korean, it's still something that I'm struggling with.
And kind of thinking along those lines too, are there any particular challenges that come to mind that you've experienced being raised in a family that has a different ethnic background or cultural tradition than yourselves, how that might have been dealt with, or your thoughts on how to handle that?
Well, I think that, and I don't know about the two of you, Astrid or Tara, but I think for me, I was always seen as myself and my brother, who's also adopted from Korea. We're always kind of seen as the exception. Like, it was okay to make comments about other ethnic groups or even Asians or even Koreans, because it didn't mean us, because we were the exception. And so that was kind of always an awkward moment, because you knew that your family wasn't intentionally trying to hurt your feelings. And of course you were the exception and they loved you and wouldn't ever want to hurt your feelings. But at the same time, there's an automatic association. We're like, hey, I'm a person of color and I'm Korean and I'm Asian. So how does that reflect, mm-hmm. basically? Yeah. So I'm not, yeah.
I think I can definitely relate to that. When my parents spoke about race, or when they had discussions about race, it was always about black and white. And here I am, Korean within this family, but they're not talking about issues of race with Asian folks or people of color. So when I dealt with racism when I was growing up, as I deal with it as an adult, they weren't really present for me, and I never really felt that I could actually speak to them about race, because for them, race was all about black and white.
I completely agree with both of you that the exception issue, I think, is a big one. Even, you know, beyond the extension of your family, friends and people feel that there's this level of, oh, well, I can ask Astrid. She's a safe person to ask about race stuff. Or is it okay if I say this or that? Which, in a sense, they're right. I am a safer person for a lot of people to ask questions. But I think that for me, it was one of the biggest challenges was cultural competency, that I had the expectation that I knew what it meant to be Colombian or Hispanic or Mexican or, you know, South American, where I'm just, you know, lumped into this this awkward, in the same way I'm sure a lot of you are, Asian. It's, you know, you can answer all questions for all Asian people. You are now the representative. And what's so scary about that is that I'm so far from representing that population of people. And so I had that expectation, not so much in my family, but I had that expectation in the larger society. And that's been a huge challenge, even within the culture of Hispanic people that expect me to speak Spanish or expect me to dress a certain way. And it's very belittling for me. And I have no control over that.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, it seems like, I mean, this is something that this highlights for me, is just the way that we think of race is just this fact, right? And associate it with all sorts of things, and these, you know, generally very simplistic ways. And I think with this race is, what are the assumptions people make, and in what ways, despite how you might yourself identify or what culture you've been raised in and so forth, that people will make these sorts of assumptions. And, you know, talking about assumptions, are there any misconceptions around transracial and transnational adoption that, you know, come to mind that you've heard maybe around what people think of the phenomenon and experience and what assumptions they might make?
Well, I think this is, I'm sensing that it's maybe not so extreme now, whereas maybe a few years ago, it was, you know, just kind of the knee-jerk reaction that you got when people realized or you told them that you were adopted, and just like the, oh, I'm sorry, or, oh, you know, like, oh, wow, you, that's really sad for you. So I think, you know, that stands out definitely as one of the major things, but I think because it's kind of becoming popularized now, it's not such a, oh, I'm sorry, but it's, I think it's kind of transitioned into like, oh, you're so lucky. So that's been interesting to kind of sense that transition. And then the other one that I want to put out there is also just the misconception that the adoptees who may have some kind of what we people would call a critical analysis are seen as really angry and disgruntled and, you know, unthankful or unappreciative. And I think that's really... that really needs to be addressed within our own community, among ourselves, because not often is that perspective really given a platform to be heard with any validity, other than just that angry, pissed off adoptee.
Other misconceptions or assumptions that people have run into?
I definitely see the misconception of love is enough. With adoptive parents, if I love this child and I raise this child as if they were born to me, that they won't have any issues of race. And Tara and I are both a part of an adult adoptee movie group, and she and I co-facilitate this group for adult adoptees. And it's interesting because we have comments for, in this movie group. We watch mainstream movies together, and then we have anywhere between a 2 to 3 hour conversation afterwards, and a lot of times it's hard to get people out because we're just so jazzed about talking about adoptions with other adult adoptees. And you hear a lot, well, my mom or my dad think that I'm okay with being raised in a white family, but you know what, it's not, I'm not, and I'm not comfortable talking to my parents about this, and so then the misconception even grows even that much bigger because the children aren't comfortable talking with their parents because their parents haven't facilitated any avenues for them to talk. So therefore, the misconception is growing, and we're kind of a part of, you know, the adult adoptee has a responsibility to say, this is important. And I think a lot of people really are concerned that what the backlash would be on their family, because your family is still your family.
So sort of going off what Liz was saying, and I think that this holds true also for people who weren't adopted transracially, but I think that the conception is that if you do speak critically about adoption or the business of adoption, then you're ungrateful. And not only that you're ungrateful, but that you don't love your parents, or that you are mad at your parents, or that they didn't raise you correctly. And I think people look at that, or parents might look at that and say, okay, well, I'm going to do differently. And then all of a sudden it's solved. But it's just really silencing the voices that would actually help the business grow stronger, help it become more humane, help all sorts of things. And I think it's really important to sort of acknowledge that.
Well, definitely. I mean, I think having this panel and raising these issues, Liz, you brought up the issue kind of mainstreaming of, when you were mentioning that and kind of how things have shifted. And, you know, certainly a number of us noticed the commercials that feature adoptive families and there's no mention of it. And, you know, and so on the one hand, there's this mainstreaming and, you know, to what extent might that gloss over some of the very issues that you're raising? And at the same time, to what extent might that be an opportunity to start getting much more kind of in the kind of the conversations that go around transracial, transnational adoption, having that higher visibility. Just a reminder, too, we'll be taking your calls in just a few moments. That number is 503-231-8187. Another one of the questions, Astrid, you had mentioned some of your interactions with the Latino community. So kind of thinking through maybe some of those interactions, people's responses within those communities, you know, have things been changing, or what have been the responses of some of the, within the U.S., so the Asian American community, Latino communities, to adoptees?
I have the sense that we, those of us who are in adoptions and in the field of adoption and trying to make it, you know, seeing it advanced, I really think that reality is we're not where I think we are or where I would like to see us be. I think that we, when it comes to the interactions with folks of other ethnic groups, or my comfort level of that is that a lot of people don't think that there's racial tension, I think there still is. And the woman that was earlier in the program, she had said that we're afraid to talk about race. And I really believe that we still are in a place where parents who adopt children internationally, they are, if they're willing to talk about race, they are the exception to the rule. And so, therefore, if that's the case, then we're raising children. We're still raising children in a very racially divided society. And that's really concerning to me, that, for example, my sister and I, we were the only ones of color that we knew until we moved to Massachusetts. Outside of Massachusetts, they were busing all the black kids to where my sister and I were going to school in the rich white area. And for the first time, we saw people of color, and we became instant friends with those groups. So we were living in bringing big city problems to, you know, rich white areas. And that was a challenge, definitely, for my family. But anyway, I definitely think races, we're not where we should be or could be.
Other observations?
I think one thing that really goes, if it's spoken about, I don't think it's spoken to enough, is just that question that you were raising about the ethnic communities here in the U.S., so like the Korean American community for myself. I don't think it's really taken into consideration kind of the impact that adoption has just within the home country, but also with the communities here in the U.S., because I think it's just assumed that, sure, the Korean community definitely wants to be, you know, participatory in, you know, Korean adoptees activities and wants to support them. And, you know, here in Portland, I believe that's true to a certain extent, but I think that there's still, you know, I guess there's still a lot of things that need to be worked out, and a lot of things that are assumed really just shouldn't be. It shouldn't, you know, there's a comfort level with, at least from my experience, with non-adopted Korean Americans here and adoptees. There's definitely a line that I think subconsciously we kind of all know, both Korean American non-adoptees and Korean American adoptees know kind of not to cross, or are, you know, yeah, basically we know not to cross. So I think that's something that I think really needs to be addressed a little more here in the U.S.
Yeah. And just to repeat the phone number, it's 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. Other thoughts on that? And yeah, I know, you know, from some of my students who are Asian adoptees, you know, they get into these classrooms, and particularly Asian American studies, there is this assumption, and then from other Asian American students, this kind of perception, and certainly it's not, you know, all of them, but once in a while they'll hit up on this kind of, oh, well, you're not really Asian, and this kind of tension of almost having to prove you know, your particular issues, and really kind of establishing some legitimacy on the specific issues for adoptees, and having that you know, space carved out even within that conversation. Again, back to conversations on race and kind of, you know, if those conversations happen, they are simplistic. Tara, you raise this issue that is, you know, often seen as black, white, and mm-hmm. there are all these points in between. And even within that conversation, there's complexities, again, that get so glossed over. The last question that I had was what advice or suggestions you might make to adoptive parents, to adoptive families, the agencies that are, you know, handling these adoptions. It came up in one of the interviews that these agencies have no legal obligation after, you know, the adoption process is finalized to follow up, to, you know, see what happens with these children to help the families. I mean, again, back to where do the families turn when they have these questions and these issues come up. So what thoughts you might have on that?
Well, for me personally, I think it's, I mean, I think the legal, not having the legal obligation to me, I think is kind of, I see it as a cop-out, because you facilitate this really life-altering process, not only for the adoptee, but for the adoptive family as well. So you're facilitating this really life-altering process, and to say, okay, now we're done, we don't have any legal obligation, but out of the kindness of our hearts, we're going to have some post-adoption services that may or may not be adequate to the needs of our clientele. So to me, I see that, you know, I'm appreciative of the efforts that agencies make in post-adoption services, but at the same time, I think that it should be an obligation. If not legally, then at least morally, or, you know, humanitarian-wise, because you can't do that. You can't just facilitate this huge thing and then say, okay, we're done, see you later, have a nice life.
Yeah. Other suggestions?
I think basically what's really important is that when you're adopting transracially, you simply cannot ignore the issue of race. You just can't ignore it. And as far as cultural competency for parents who are adopting, there needs to be more education. And I know a lot of parents will say, well, you know, if I were to birth my own child, I wouldn't have to take a class first. Mm-hmm. But you know, when it comes to adoption and adopting transracially, there really has to be a level of cultural competency.
Yeah. Well, until we have a phone call, and I definitely want to give you a chance to answer this question as well, but go ahead, caller.
Hi. Thanks. First of all, thanks for having the show. It's a really great show, and thanks for drawing attention to the children in foster care. I'm about to adopt a child, and I thought I would, from China, and I thought through Hold, and I thought I'd offer what my motivations were and what the process has been like for me, and then hear what kinds of suggestions and advice the panelists have. And I've actually been to a workshop by Astrid, and I would love to hear more about Adoption Mosaic, because I think what Astrid's doing is really wonderful.